Kia ora, Ferg here. Welcome to Season 4 of the Head Shepherd Podcast. Head Shepherd is brought to you by the team at NextGen Agri. Both NextGen Agri and the Head Shepherd Podcast are focused on the business of livestock farming. My passion is livestock genetics, but I'm pretty keen on all aspects of livestock farming, and that is reflected by the great guests that we've had on so far and will have this season. Many thanks to all of you for listening. I really do love playing a small part in your weekly routine. A massive thanks to Allflex, who are again sponsoring this season. From tags to TSUs to sensors, Allflex have a great range of products that are always evolving with the farmer in mind, and their service is second to none. Welcome back to Head Shepherd. Fantastic this week, all the way to WA, and have Brendan Savage on board. Welcome, Brendan.
Hi, Mark. How are you going?
Yeah, good, mate. Thanks very much for coming on and having a chat. I thought we'd just start with a bit of your backstory, Brendan, and sort of tell people where you farm and what you farm, and I guess who else is involved in the business there.
Yeah, we farm in Coolin, so about 3.5 hours southeast of Perth in the medium to low rainfall zone. We've got a prominently lighter soils for the area, and we've concentrated on a sheep flock in the last 4 to 5 years. We've gone from 70% cropping to back to 50% cropping. My father still comes out and helps check the sheep, and I've got a son that's been home for, Nick's been home for 3 years. It's his third year, and I've got a son spending the year doing a gap year with us, which is fantastic considering we're probably having the best year since 97. Yeah, our sheep flock's predominantly been a maternal composite flock, which is a little bit different as well. And, yeah, we're just enjoying having a great year this year.
Yeah, well deserved. It's been great to see the tractors bogged and stuff on social media over there, which is a bit different to a few previous years anyway.
Yeah, I don't think it's a lot of fun for them when they get stuck. We put the last few paddocks of crop in with hardly anything in the cedar box and managed to get away with it. So another 10 mils last night, and I think some of the eastern wheat belts picked up another 20 to 30, which, yeah, it's just unbelievable.
Yeah, no, it was, I think our last guest said there's more money in mud than dust, so I think that's definitely true.
It certainly is.
I guess we're going to talk a bit about soil to start with, and when I was reading up about you, I came across the word reefinate, which I'd never heard before or never seen before, but can you run us through what that means and what it's meant for farming out your way?
Yeah, so on the hills here we have ironstone, and in the valleys, you know, some blokes are unlucky enough to have a bit of salt. But about 7 or 8 years ago, we were fortunate enough that Rox Gorn invented this machine called a reefinator, and it's been able to turn some of the very unproductive hills into quite productive soil. 2016, we bought a reefinator to fix up a farm that we'd bought, and we've had, yeah, magnificent results. We've then been able to go on and do a bit of contracting to help pay for it. But ironstone, you know, it's scattered across your paddocks on the hilltops, and so you can't sort of turn your seeder on and off, and you can't turn your boom spray and your spreader on and off. So, you know, your inputs go out on that country, and you don't quite often get much of an income off it. So it's been a huge turnaround to, you know, if you lost that area, you'd need nearly the same area again to cover for it. So now we're actually growing some of our better crops on some of that country, because once the roots get through that rocky top bit, they seem to get into some clay, and it holds the moisture extremely well. So it's been a bit of a revolution for this area.
Yeah, cool. So it's literally crushing rocks, is it? Like ripping it up and crushing that? It's like a hard pan, is it? Or what's the...
Yeah, it's just like conglomerate. It's like anything from sheet rock to just quite crumbly.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like some country you might go over 2 or 3 times and fix it up. Some you might have to go over 10 times, but I don't know. We've done about 5,000 hours in the last since 16, and I reckon there's probably only a couple of acres that we haven't been able to dig up properly. You know, so you turn something that you could play cricket on into, you know, 8 inches of topsoil with a bit of work.
Yeah, right. Fantastic. Excellent. So yeah, from my reading a bit about you is that you're passionate about soil and reducing synthetic fertilizer where you can. I guess what does this practically mean on the farm?
Yeah, it's been a long journey. We started about 7 years ago with Australian Soil Planters, and the goal was to not have to put more and more on every year. You know, we started off, I left school and we're using 100 kilos Aggrass and 40 kilos of urea. And each year it seemed to escalate, and with the requirements for more and more lime. So the goal was to try and produce the same with less. It's taken a little while to work it all out, but yeah, we're down to 25 to 30 kilos of MOP sulfate of potash blend, and this year our seeding brew had as little as 10 litres of UAN in it, and we put other nitrogen stimulants and nutrition with trace elements, amino acids and all that sort of stuff in, and we're hoping to grow most of our crop on the home farm with sub 7 units of N this year. We've done some grazing crop coming out of tillage radish and clover in 19 and then clover again in 20. We planted that in the 12th of March with as little as 4 units of N, and there's 2 paddocks, a 73 and a 50 hectare paddock, have had 800 sheep on them each for 2.5 to 3 weeks, and we'll probably lock them up in the next 10 days and hopefully take them through to a productive crop as well. So if we can do that sort of thing on those sort of units of N, I think it's giving us, it's obviously giving us good efficiencies of N, competitive advantage, and in the event that whatever happens with this carbon world we're in now, it might give us a lesser offset type arrangement.
Yeah, no, fair enough. And so is it through rotation and stuff that you're managing, so you're bringing N in through subclover, that sort of stuff, or you've got other processes to get nitrogen?
You know, organic N is obviously the key to it, and managing that organic N. We started mucking around with tillage radish 6 or 7 years ago. So when you come out of that a long-term cropping phase, we've been planting paddocks to tillage radish and clover. So the tillage radish and the clover synergies have worked really, really well for us. So obviously everyone knows you get your organic N from your clover. But the tillage radish seems to recycle nutrition. It's a great fodder source. You can control your grass, your sour grasses with your grass selectives, because you've got your 2 broadleaves with the tillage radish and the clover, and you've got a great fodder source. And the next year you can let your clover sort of, you know, bulk up a little bit more. And, yeah, it just seems to be a win-win. And we found that is a great way coming out of a cropping rotation. Rather than just planting a clover, you know, the first year you sort of miss out a fair bit unless you plant it with a cereal, but then you've got no way of controlling your grasses in the wintertime. So, yeah, the synergies of those two have worked really well for us.
Yeah, cool. And that tillage radish obviously gets its taproot down quite deep, and so even in your lower rainfall handles it pretty well.
Yeah, in a tough season, it might only go down 4 to 6 inches. But if things go well, yeah, they can push down quite deep. I think the tap root's great. The sheep, you know, so you've got a bit of tillage there happening as well. But the nutrient recycling is probably the key to making the tillage radish work for your next cropping rotation as well, because you're recycling your N and K and P. In a way that, yeah, you've got to see it to believe it. Like you can these crops that we've got, this Illabo wheat that we've planted, to see the production of that with less than 4 units of N is quite incredible.
So it's bringing nutrients from deeper down up to the surface, or what's it doing differently to other plants?
Yeah, you know, I'm not the scientist or the agronomist, but yeah, I think it just makes the nutrition available, whereas prior to that, I think that there's plenty of K and N still there, but it just doesn't seem to be available to the crop. But once you plant the tillage radish, yeah, don't ask me how it occurs, but it seems to.
Righto. Yeah, one thing I didn't really listen much at the university was soil, so I'm not much good to be able to explain that either, but You mentioned at the start that you're 50-50 sheep cropping, and most of that area I'm thinking is, well, probably used to be 70-30 crop to sheep, but I think you said it was even gone higher than that. So what are you, you're obviously elected to go against the trend and increase your sheep numbers. Why has that decision been made?
Yeah, so we farm at the northwest end of the Lakes District in WA, and the Lakes District has always been notorious for frost. We stopped planting wheat 2 years ago. It was just killing us. Our 6-year average, we were 600 kilos down on barley, and the wheat was on the better country. So that became a big problem. And as we took the wheat out of the program, we decided to run more sheep as well. The sheep require less inputs and they're less risk, and we were able to, if we got our nutrition right on our pastures and our pastures established how we wanted to, we believe we could grow a crop much cheaper with much less reliance on high rates of synthetics, the new chemicals, high rates of chemicals and all of the above. So we've been involved with ASP for a long time, and I'm been getting myself ASP certified so that we could hopefully sell some of our produce for a premium to more discerning markets.
Yeah, cool. So, yeah, obviously a conscious decision. Out there in Coolum, what are the elements of an efficient sheep production system where you're sort of, I guess, you're optimising profit rather than just maximising production?
You know, we haven't tried to stack the sheep on top of each other. We've been more focused on having less sheep in, as few sheep in the autumn and as many in the springtime when we've got our maximum feed available. So to do that, we had to move towards a high fertility sheep flock. So we went to maternal composite. We put a multi-mate ram over Donny or Sam ewes in the past to produce our composite ewe, and then we've put a terminal sower, a white Suffolk, to produce as many lambs as we can. We've been involved with triplet management projects with Murdoch University to try and understand the best ways to manage the triplets. But in our maternal composites, we've been consistently getting 150% lambings through to weaning from scan numbers. Then we remar scans and obviously lamb them again. And our merinos last year did 120%. To make it all work, we've tried to retain as much cover as we can in the summertime. So rather than running the sheep through to the break of the season on bare paddocks, post-shearing in January, we'll take the composites off the farm for February, March and some of April and lock them up on a barley straw that's and sprayed with molasses and other sheep nutrition products, and we put a lick out for them too and confined feed up to 2,000 ewes, and that then gives us a bit of a feed buffer for when they go out to lamb. I suppose the other key to it has been maximising our nutritional value of the pastures in the wintertime and putting a nutrition package out on that, including like sweet and trace elements and animal health products like selenium and cobalt. And the goal of that has been that when the sheep has a mouthful, it's good for it and it doesn't go straight through to the back end and result in scouring.
So that's a foliar spray or?
Yeah, we can put some of it out through the boom spray, but once you start putting trace elements and other things through it, we put it out through a giant mister.
Oh, yeah, cool.
So that enables us to get over a fair bit of country in a day, so it's not wasting too much time. Yeah, in the summertime, we've been trialling a lick for the last 2 years that's been designed by a consultant, and we've found that our dry fibre utilisation has gone up, I don't know, 100 to 200%. So with the high percentage of barley and oat doubles on the farm and no wheat doubles, we want to utilise that fibre resource as best we can and not just have the sheep walking around trampling it. And we've found we would have saved 100 tonne of lupins this year alone, I think, just on fibre utilisation from a better stock lick that we can make ourselves quite cheaply.
Yeah, righto. And so monitoring those sheep is condition scoring, preg scanning, all the, like, obviously if you're managing triplets, you know exactly which one's having triplets. You're into all the, all of those things.
Yeah, we had a we've had a good relationship with our scanner for many years, and he scans the triplets off, and we run the singles and twins together from the composites because they're mostly twins. And in the merinos, we run our twins separate to our singles. And with the triplets, I think the best result we've had in the last few years is just a really good stock lick prior to lambing, and running them in small mobs has really helped with the mismothering and that sort of thing, which is a challenge when your average paddock size is 100 hectares. But we we just save paddocks and hopefully and just use as many, try and save some small paddocks or drop crop or whatever you've got to do.
Yeah, right. So, I mean, to have that cropping and sheep mix, have you got a heap of temporary fences that go up, or is it, or you just deal with smaller paddocks than your neighbours, or how does all that work?
I just try and manage our smaller paddocks carefully. Yeah. I think fencing is going to become more important, but at the moment we've sort of just managed it with the small paddocks on the farm and dropping mobs onto crops. So if you've got a big paddock and the crop's at, five leaf stage or better, you can just go and drop a mob onto a crop without it doing too much harm. Dad would have had kittens 5 years ago if we had sheep on crops, and last year we put 2,000 ewes and lambs on 200 hectares for a couple of weeks, and when it was, halfway to your knees, and yeah, you just get used to looking at it after a few days.
Yeah, I think my father has had to have the same change in the last few years as well at home. It used to be absolute blasphemy to have a sheep anywhere near a crop, but now it's been a real revelation, the whole winter grazing, and then still getting grain yield as well, which is fantastic.
It does seem crazy, but I mean, yeah, I can't see the harm it's doing so long as you get them out before the crop becomes reproductive and it's managed reasonably well. But your lawn keeps growing back after you chop that off. So and interestingly, in 2016, we put a fence up through a new laneway through a paddock, and the crop would have done anything. And where the laneway was, the sheep grazed right to the ground, and by harvest time we would have got way more grain out of the laneway than we got out of one of the best crops on the farm because of the frost. So this year we've got crops that are just going nuts, and to knock them back a little bit with grazing, I think probably a good risk management strategy, and just on its own without all the other benefits.
Yeah, no, exactly. Yeah, particularly I hadn't even thought about that with frost, but yeah, there's good evidence now that it's a pretty handy practice to do. Obviously, you've gone for focusing on fertility, but I think rightly so. I've heard you mention in articles before that you sort of got to have the nutrition right before you chase lambs. There's no point filling lambs up with, or filling paddocks up with, suboptimum birth weight lambs and then having that disaster. So you've obviously gone about it getting the pastures right and nutrition right before or as fertility's been increasing.
Yeah. Residual benefit over, 10 to 20 years has helped a lot too, I think, just keeping the soluble calcium up. Obviously putting out licks that are focused on calcium and nutrition has been very important. But at the same time, yeah, if your pastures are not very good, then I don't think they're going to have the nutrition to handle high fertility flocks either. But yeah.
I read an article where you were talking about having the same or challenging the cropping, I suppose, saying that there's equal or more profit in sheep. Has that been the case, or is that just to stir up your neighbours, or you reckon that's obviously gone 50-50, so you see some serious profitability in sheep?
I think it's a long-term view, Mark. Like in any year in isolation, if this year's a ripper season, the cropping's going to kill the sheep, and then you can't compete with a cropping operation when everything goes perfect. If the drought in the US plays out and prices rally, I'll never a high sheep business will probably never beat him. But the whole concept is not to win in any particular year. It's to take the highs and lows out of farming. Bank managers, I'm pretty sure, prefer you just to keep ticking along. I'm not interested in taking losses. When you've got to educate your kids and your wife likes shiny stuff, you don't want to be leaving yourself exposed to frost and dry finishes. Yeah, that's the whole concept, I suppose, just to take the highs and lows out of it. But as far as profitability goes, we're not committed to having millions and millions of dollars tied up in machinery. We can save a lot of money on the inputs on our crop. We don't have to be chasing the brand new chemicals. We can be using more conservative rates of some of the older chemicals, and you control on your weeds. If you're getting your nutrition right on your pastures, you're getting massive amounts of organic N coming into the system. If we can rotate tillage radish through the farm, this year we managed to get 20% of the farm to tillage radish because the season broke early and we're able to really use that. It was probably the best opportunity we've had in years to control weeds and set up pastures and recycle nutrition. So that sets us up for the next few years, I believe. But yeah, so we're not out there to beat a cropper year on year. And I like watching what my neighbours do. We've got some pretty exciting guys around us, and I just want to take the highs and lows out of agriculture, Mark.
Yeah, excellent. I think that 100% agree. That's what bank managers like to see. That's why they like long term contracts and low risk strategies, that because they know that they will still be there the following year. And yeah, this podcast will come out a couple after the one we had with Bill Malcolm, which was very much focused on that. Him and I both grew up in a fairly similar rainfall environment to you, where it's not easy to farm and it's easy to have those failures. So systems that balance that risk is becoming increasingly important, particularly as we see climate becoming increasingly more, I guess, diverse and risky and sporadic. I did see somewhere you've got Lucerne running between Blue Mallee. How does that work?
Yeah, there was 10 years ago, or maybe a bit longer, we started getting a bout of summer rains, and we did plant some Lucerne in between all Mallees on some lower country, and it went exceptionally well for about 7 or 8 years, and we would manage to fatten large numbers of lambs in the summertime. But yeah, bugs and, well, locusts, and took it out after, I don't know, a certain period. I don't know how long it should be expected to last in this environment, but yeah, we've terminated the lucerne now. But it was a great thing while it was ticking along and we were getting large summer rains. But perennials here, if we get dry seasons, it's just a non-event. But while we were getting that run of wet summers, it went really well. I'd do it again. Wouldn't concern me to plant another stand of lucerne if it looked like we were going to have really, really good summer rains. But, yeah, just at the moment we're probably flat out re-establishing clover and using the tillage radish to do that over a little bit more of the farm that's come out of full, long-term cropping rotation.
Yeah, cool. So, yeah, no, that's fair enough. Another thing I was reading was that a little bit about capeweed and scouring. Those two words go pretty well together in WA and other parts of the world, but I think WA has probably got a pretty handy base of capeweed. And the scouring, sounds like you've got an approach that has done a fair bit to reduce that.
Capeweed's an interesting plant. Even back in my uni days, we had to weigh it for dry matter in the oven. And I was quite intrigued by how much was actually there. And so we go from zero feed to, feed coming out of your ears in a period of 6 weeks. And the sad bit is, if you have a couple of false breaks or something, your clover can struggle, but the capeweed seems to survive. And in 2020, must have had 4 or 5 false breaks, and some of the clover did struggle, and the capeweed does become dominant. So it became a bit of a challenge on how to manage that. And I think we've turned it from, not a pest, but a below average feed into probably one of the better feed sources on the farm if it's managed correctly. 5 years ago, I started playing around with calcium, magnesium, and got this product called X-Sweet that we spray on. And my dad, I don't tell my dad what I'm doing too much because he then becomes the best critic in the world. And if he doesn't know, he doesn't have any preconceived ideas. So we brought in the ewes and lambs from this particular paddock that we'd put it on. And he said, "Brendan, these are the best lambs on the farm, and they'd come off the worst pasture." So instead of it just becoming a remedy to fix up the high nitrates in the capeweed, we started playing around with adding the trace elements and animal health to it, and it's now just become standard practice. But, you know, it's quite sad that, you know, you get a cape, get all that grain feed, and your sheep are not utilising it very well. Whereas once you get the right nutrition onto it, you know, the sheep are camped up by, you know, 8:30, 9 o'clock in the morning and just chewing their cud. They've finished scare, they don't scour, and your production goes through the roof. So yeah, we're quite happy to work with capeweed in the event that we have false breaks, and I think it's become a valuable feed source. So, you know, if your sheep are scouring on capeweed, well, you're losing money, aren't you?
Yeah, definitely. So that's again something out the back of the mister that applies that all.
Yep. So same thing. We sort of started off with just the calcium mag thing, and then now that because of the results we had, we now just add traces to it, add the animal health products to it, and virtually the whole pastures on the farm, time permitting, we get this nutrition package out onto so as to take advantage of every mouthful of grain feed. And then the idea is to maintain as much cover for the summertime then so that you get better value from your summer feed as well.
Ah, fantastic. So it sounds like you've lots of things going on there that are really interesting. What's next for the farm, or any big plans? Or
I'd like to slow down, but I've got a 21-year-old son. So it's quite it's good fun watching their enthusiasm and seeing how keen they are. But the next stages, I'd really like to be able to take the produce that we are producing to the next level. We're working with a malt house that's starting up in region WA, and he's done trials with our barley and taking it through to malt. We've sent trials over to Voyager, and we've had homebrew kits made at Torella and different beers here and there, and we're getting fantastic feedback. So I'm hoping to work with a brewer down south that's very excited. We're also sent oats samples off to a company to have them tested for nutrient density. So that's my project going forward, is just to try and extract a little bit more value out of what we're doing. You would think that once you get a product that is grown on a higher nutritional package, it'll become easy to market, but quite the opposite seems to happen. I'm also quite involved with Southern Cross Ag, and we've got an ASP certification. So I'm probably the only West Australian certified ASP producer.
What does ASP stand for? Just for
Australian Sustainable Produce Certified.
Cool, thanks, mate.
That was backed off, you know, Australian Soil Planners advisory. But so that's where I want to be going forward, is having a play around with those sort of things while the boys do a bit more of the work on the farm, and it keeps me a little bit interested. And if we can make a nice beer out of it, that's just a bonus, I reckon. So
yeah, I was going to say there'd be me and a few others will be lining up to taste those sort of samples, I reckon.
Yeah, and look, going forward too, I don't know what's going to happen with climate, and I don't know what's going to happen with government policies and financial institutions, but I think a lot of farmers are probably a bit anxious about what's going to happen as far as offsets. But, yeah, my goal is just to position the business such that the offsets is not going to bowl us over. It's more just a glancing blow, and we if we can set the business up that our footprint is not too bad, that should give us some competitive advantage going forward.
Yeah, no, fantastic. Thanks very much for your time today, Brendan. That probably sums it up there right at the end. And, yeah, really enjoyed learning about your business, and I'm sure the listeners across the globe will as well. So, yeah, thanks for your time, and hopefully that good season continues on.
Thanks a lot, Mark. Good on you, mate.
Thanks for listening to this episode. I really hope you've enjoyed it. Head Shepherd is produced by the talented Sophie Barnes. Thanks again to Allflex for their ongoing support and their sponsorship of Season 4. The team at Allflex couldn't be more helpful, and we really enjoy our long-term association with them.